Hello, Miranda Tetlow here from ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Being on the road is such a huge part of our territory life. The bitumen unfolding like black carpet on red dirt, the desert, the rocky ranges and scrubby bush, water crossings and roadhouses, carcasses of dead animals and long-forgotten burnt-out car bodies. These are things we've all seen, but Cherie Kearney has probably thought a lot more about it than most of us. Cherie is a neuroscientist and photographer living and working in Alice Springs, and her driving adventures in the Territory range from the sublime, campfires and swags and streams of milky stars above, to the downright terrifying, car rollovers and accidents in which she was the first on the scene. But all of these experiences have fueled the art. Cherie, it's great to catch up with you again. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Great to be here. What a great welcome.
Let's start with a driving story that I feel like starts with sublime and then maybe goes to another place. A remote road, it's sunset. Can you paint a picture of where you were and what was happening?
So I'm driving down from Darwin to Adelaide, actually, was the intention. And there I am. I'm driving somewhere. I passed Catherine. The sun's going down. I vowed not to camp. I'm by myself, as I usually am when I drive, and I've vowed not to drive on the Stuart Highway at night. It was only a few years after the disappearance of the English backpacker Peter Falconio. So there's a lot of fear about a serial killer being out there. And myself, I like to camp a little bit off the road, so nobody knows that I'm there by myself. And so I'm driving down. I pass Catherine. The sun's going down. It's gorgeous. There's like the rainbow sunset time, I call it, where you've got the sort of purple painting the horizon, the orange above it, and then the beautiful midnight blue starting to form in the sky, and then the orange goes further and further below the sunset. I'm driving along, and I should stop, but I think, no, look, I'm going to keep going because I'm in love with this moment. I've got the music blaring, and I'll just try and get as far as I can to Mataranka because I know there's a campsite there I can camp at. And all of a sudden, under the bonnet, I hear this bang. And I pull over. The car has no power anymore. I pull over. I pull over to the side of the road. I'm unsure what's happened. It's starting to get dark. I open up the bonnet, and there's I can't work out. I can't see anything that I can fix. So I realize, okay, I'm here. It's getting dark now. There's nothing I can do. What I'll do is I'll go and camp in. I'll set myself in the back seat and I'll camp in the car. And then I think, no. One of my greatest fears when I've been on the road, this was 15 years ago as well, but particularly back then, was someone that I'm scared of, knowing that I'm out there by myself. So then I picture my car stopping and finding me. And if it's somebody I'm scared of, they see me in the back of the car by myself. So I feel, no, I'm not going to do that. So I think, okay, I'll grab my tent and I'll go and camp in the bushes. And then I think, no, if somebody stops, they might have a dog, they might go hunting. I'm not going to be able to sleep all night. I'll be terrified. So I think, okay, I'm going to have to hitchhike in the morning anyway, so why don't I hitch now? Okay, so I brace myself and I'm terrified, and by then the sun's gone down, it's black, and the Stuart Highway at night, there's an occasional car, at the time there was no cars, it was just completely blackness. And I go into the car and I'm my heart's racing. I see a bottle of wine and I take a skull because I think I need some courage here. I don't know how I'm going to pull this off. And I did something I don't normally do, or I didn't back then, and I prayed. And so then I wait and I wait and I wait, and eventually the headlights pierce the horizon of a car coming, and my heart's racing, and I put my hand out as it gets closer, really tentatively, to hitch, and the car just drives straight by me, and I think, oh my God, thank God. Yeah, I'm relieved because I really didn't want to face that moment when somebody stops. And the next car, I wait, and another car comes along eventually, and I put my finger out, and they just drive right by. And I'm relieved. And then it happens three or four more times, car go by and ignores me, and the next car goes by. And then I realize that I'm as scary to them as they are to me, that stopping for a woman in the middle of the night by the side of the road is actually quite a risky and scary thing to do. And then I realize that this car starts slowing down and it's going to stop, and it kind of goes by me, and then it puts its taillights on, and I see the taillights bright red across the road, and then it turns around and it's coming to me, and my heart's just racing, and I'm thinking, I'm going to know as soon as I look in that window whether I trust the driver or not. And if I don't, if I'm scared of them, I'm really vulnerable, and they know I'm here by myself and I'm in trouble. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So my heart is racing as they reverse and they come back to me and come back to me. And just as I look in the car, I see the eyes of four black men looking back at me, four young Aboriginal men. And I thought to myself, thank God. I was so relieved. And why was I relieved when I saw those guys? Because I knew them. I was working maybe 5 years, I think, in those same remote communities in the region I was in. I was working as a neuroscientist in Arnhem Land and a lot of the desert communities, and I was working with petrol sniffers. We were looking at the impacts of petrol on the brain and also doing studies about marijuana. So as a big part of my research, I was working in the prisons with young Aboriginal men and also out in the communities and those that were using drugs and those that weren't. But I spent a lot of time talking to young Aboriginal men and women. And so I was familiar with these guys, and I knew when I saw them being young Aboriginal men that they had a sense of country and belonging on their community and a sense of responsibility for what happens on their land, and that included me. And so I knew that I was not going to let them go up that road without me in the car and take me to safety, which they did.
It's such an amazing story and just one of so many that you've gotten. You're going to hear more of those before 2 o'clock today. But this is all fueled the work that you've created, which is called The Road. It's an exhibition, multi-screen video, and it kind of takes you on this really abstract journey through some of these roads in this country and, like, I guess all those extremes of what it looks like and how it feels and experience. Can you tell me a bit more about what you wanted to explore with this?
Yeah, the motivation for the road exhibition was the experience for about 20 years now in between my work in remote communities. I kind of spend my spare time driving around the bush by myself and exploring places, and I like to get as far away as I can from people and places and just camp out there in the nature, in the bush. And I have the most pristine experiences. I almost feel this guilt, like I'm doing something wrong, because maybe as a woman as well, it's not something that's very common. And, you know, I don't really know anyone else who explores the bush in the same way that I do by myself. And so, but through that process, I also have these bliss moments and these insights. And it's when I get furthest away and so immersed in the stars, the sun, the sunrise, the light and the dark of the nature that I become so absorbed and so at one really with those patterns of nature that I start to see myself, and I have these amazing insights and visions that guide my work or guide my life, and they're the most beautiful, blissful experiences. And so I've observed the process, having done this for so many years, I've observed the process, and even though every single trip is completely different. And I observed this just driving up from Alice Springs here to Darwin for this actual exhibition. I thought, this is really trippy. I'm making a road trip to an exhibition about a road trip where I'm kind of like for the first time, you know, sharing something that's very much my private universe. And even observing my experience on this most recent road trip, there are always different versions of a kind of exactly the same thing. And what happens is that and what the exhibition represents is that you're moving from between worlds. You're moving from one world to another. And in doing so, you're going out to the edge. You're going out to the edge of yourself and to the edge of the world that you know, and you're rubbing up against it. And then you're moving over and going into another world. And so there's this process that happens. And in the first driving out of a town, in the first day or so, your mind and your emotions are full of the people and the places that you came from, that you're leaving. You know, that you have these flashbacks of scenarios, conversations, things that you're trying to, problems you might be trying to solve or work you meant to do. And then I notice this just disentangles over a day or two. It probably happens faster and faster the more years I've been doing it, but it disentangles, and then you become embraced with the road. You know, there's the road in front of you. There's open space, and driving out to the desert, which I've done more in the last 10 years, is a whole different experience because of the vastness. And so, you know, you let go of where, you know, you don't think about where you've come from anymore. You get to this point where you're just left with yourself and the country. And that at that point, which is represented in the exhibition, you can have some kind of scary experiences. It can be confronting. You know, if you've got fears or any sort of emotions that are tricky coming up, you know, that's where they're going to come up, because there's this space and there's just you and there's nobody else's voice or energy to bounce off. And then there is also the experiences you come along, which is also depicted in the exhibition, about challenges of that you have to overcome. They might be car accidents or cars breaking down or, you know, and through this experience you find that you become really attuned with the tools of survival. So over so many years, I've gotten into trouble so many times, and each time I've used that experience to prepare me better the next time. So by having, say, two spare tyres, or making sure you have enough water. And when you're at that point with when you start to really embrace the deserts and the bush, you understand the things that you need. And I've sort of developed an inner voice, I guess, that I give her the name Mavis. She's my responsible inner voice. And she says, you know, she checks in, and it's these really rudimentary things that you need out there. It's water and it's fuel. And your vehicle needs to be okay. And they're the main tick points. And the fuel you need is, you know, fuel for yourself as well as fuel for the car. And if those things are not there, then you're in trouble.
So many thoughts going through your head as you're travelling through these spaces. It sort of strikes me as being a bit meta, because there you are, a neuroscientist as well. How are you watching the thoughts in your head, that mental journey as a scientist?
It's very fascinating for me on so many levels. One thing that really strikes me is the difference in sensory processing. When I drive out, I become way more attuned to the senses of nature. So it's the light and the dark and the day and the night, the sunset, the stars. If the moon's out, that really defines how the night's going to go. And the sounds of water, if they're there, or weather. I develop my own senses in being able to read the land, because it makes a difference. It makes a difference if there's a storm coming. I've gotten stuck in a few, in some precarious scenarios. And so, you know, you really need to know what's going on a long way away. And I've noticed myself, something will pick my eye up and it'll be kilometres away. And as I get closer, it's a man-made, it might be a car bonnet wreck or something like that. But my own senses become really sensitive, or really attuned to the difference between the elements of nature, I guess, and the introduced things. And then when I come back to towns, it's really quite confronting, you know, because you've got this, like, traffic lights and bitumen. Hitting the bitumen is the first level of reintroduction. And then, you know, hitting towns and sounds. And I've often sat in the kitchen after I've come home, and the clock is just so loud, ticking, because my senses are just magnified.
You're listening to Late Lunch, Miranda Tetlow with you on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Cherie Kearney, my guest today. She's a neuroscientist and photographer. She's just created a video work called The Road. And you touched on this, Cherie, but you have had more than a few close calls on the road. Tell me about the rollover that happened in Arnhem Land. Gosh, this must have been during your PhD, I think.
Yes, it was. I think it was about 2001, so it was nearly 20 years ago. And I just hadn't been in Arnhem Land long, and I was, like all good PhD students, I had a number of chronic illnesses that are related to PhDs, I'm sure. I had a prolapsed disc in my back, and I had Ross River virus, actually. But anyway, that didn't stop me from getting into four-wheel driving. I got myself for less than $5,000, you could get these sort of great four-wheel drives that the miners were always offloading out there. So I bought a green four-wheel drive and I loved it. I thought it was like toy driving in hindsight. I didn't realise the dangers of four-wheel driving. I went out with some friends to Cape Arnhem. We got a permit, and I was with two friends who were nurses at the hospital and another group of people. And we went out to Cape Arnhem, which is just beautiful, beautiful country. We had a beautiful weekend, and we had to leave the group early because my two nursemates had a shift at the hospital. So off we head. You know, we were all having turns in driving, and it was very slow across the sand and rugged. And then we kind of hit the old dirt track that was a bit faster. And one of my mates said, "Hey, can I have a drive?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, you know." But intuitively, I just said to everyone, "But put your seatbelts on." And in hindsight, this is the moment that saved my life. So my mate started driving, and we were driving along, absorbing that beautiful red road and the Arnhem Land green trees that sort of meet at this beautiful single point perspective at the front of the horizon. And there we were, and we came over. There was a few bends. We're out near the airport. We came over a bit of a hill, and as we did, the road turned off to the right, and my mate tried to correct, and in doing so, we just suddenly started rolling. And as soon as we knew that we were rolling, I'll never forget the feeling. You just submit yourself. My mind just went, we're out of control now. We're about to roll, and there's nothing. We might not survive. We might survive and not be very well. well. And at that moment, you submit yourself, and everything just went into slow motion. As we went upside down, I could see the bonnet smashing on the ground, and we continued rolling, and then it sped up again, and then we'd stopped rolling, and I could move my arms and legs, and I thought, great. And I turned around, and my two mates seemed to be moving. One of them sort of had some blood on the forehead, and out we got, and I was ecstatic because I couldn't believe that we survived, and I just felt unbeatable. And so I was running around looking at the car wreck, and my mate, who was a nurse, said, "Lie down on the ground." And I was like, "But I'm okay." And she said, "No, you might have internal injuries. Lie down." And I lay down for a second, then I felt, "No, I've got to jump. I've got to move. I've got to check out the car. I'm alive." And but yeah, when the policewoman came and asked if we were wearing seatbelts, it took me a while to remember that I'd made that comment about the seatbelts, and I thought, I think I was. I'm not really sure. And she said, if you weren't wearing seatbelts, when that windscreen popped out the way it did, you would have gone straight after it. And then I remember the bonnet smashing on the ground, and I just, really thank my lucky stars, because I would have not survived that had I not been wearing the seatbelts. That was a brilliant lesson.
Just amazing to wrap your mind about. The crazy thing was you had another accident a few weeks after that.
Yeah, I did. I had I was devastated about my four-wheel drive, and then I got out my old credit card and bought another $5,000 four-wheel drive from the side of the road off from the miners, because I was driving, I was leaving Arnhem Land to drive the Long Arnhem Highway from Gove to Katherine with another friend. And I felt more sensible and wiser. I drove for 3 hours. Then my friend, a different friend, got in the driver's seat, and all of a sudden, and she's, she was aware of the accident, so she was very cautious. And then all of a sudden, we were doing about 80 on a long straight road that seemed to have no hiccups, no dangers. And all of a sudden, we just started sliding, and we hit a dust bowl. And so we started sliding. Every time we got to the side of the road, she didn't put the brakes on because she thought that might create an accident. And instead, she steered the wheel to stay on the road. And in doing so, we just started going swerving right across the road, back and forth and back and forth. And each time we were getting closer to rolling. And we went for about 250 metres, in enough time to have a conversation. And she said, "What will I do?" And I said, "Don't steer, like hit the tree, like just go straight into the bush." And so she did. And then we went for about 100 metres, banging trees, and they just squashed the front of the car. And so when we finally came to a stop, there was one big long tree across the front bonnet and the windscreen, and there was two trees had squashed each of the front guards, and it just looked completely squashed. And we dug our way out, we lifted off that tree, and we came back, and we the engine was still running, but the front of the car was just squashed onto the engine. So we got a rope and tied it to a tree and the front of the bonnet, and reversed so that the front of the car came off the engine, and miraculously there was no holes in the radiator. When we actually got it, we sort of bush bashed it back to the road, and the car was actually running fine and the radiator was fine. So miraculously, we were able to drive another 900 Ks or whatever it was back to Katherine. Sitting in the cabin, we kind of forgot how bad the car looked. But when the vehicles passed us, especially as we got to towns and everything, their jaws just hit the ground, and we realised how bad our car. It looks like we were driving a car wreck. But we got there.
You said you felt euphoric after surviving the first accident. How did you feel after this second one?
The second one really shook me up. I felt really euphoric after the first one because I'd survived. The fact that I had two car accidents within 3 weeks, both in the passenger side of my own vehicle, but after the second one, I was really shaken up because I thought, I don't know, I was like, this seems unexplainable. I felt out of control. I felt in danger. We had a trip in a small aircraft in Arnhem Land the week after, and I was terrified to go on anything like that. I felt like I was, in danger. And it took me a long time. It took me, over a year, I think, to get over that. Anytime I was in the passenger seat of anyone's vehicle, even in the city on a road on the bitumen, I would have white knuckles because I always felt like we were sliding and I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell how strong, firmly the road was on the wheels, or how confident the driver felt when driving. So I just felt like I was always sliding around and in danger. So it did take me a really long time to get over that, actually.
Cherie, I'm mindful, just listening to all your stories, that we do have this darker side to the road in the Territory, that we do lose so many people in tragic accidents, that we have had so much heartache. How do you factor all that in into your thinking and your adventuring?
I think it's something to always be mindful of and to really take seriously. I've been very fortunate in my experiences that I've walked away from them, but I don't feel that they were, you know, it's very much the luck of the draw in a sense. And so my experiences of the rollover, particularly that first rollover, it was miraculous that I walked away from that, and I was very lucky, and I know that. I don't muck around with that anymore. So, you know, there's two major factors, I think, that came into play for me there. One is having the seatbelt on, and two is having a roadworthy vehicle that, you know, that the rust and the vehicle held up to the roll. So it makes me value those kind of things, but also I irrespective of that, I think there's just a real luck of the draw thing. When you're on a highway, I know when I'm on a highway or on a bush track, there's particularly with road trains and all sorts of dangers there, there's always a danger that something can go wrong, and you don't muck around with that. You've got to take that seriously.
You're listening to Late Lunch on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Miranda Tetlow with you, and Cherie Kearney is my guest today, neuroscientist, photographer and avid road adventurer. Cherie, I guess you've also experienced the flip side of being in an accident, which is being first on the scene for an accident. Can you tell me about an experience that you had there?
I was driving along the Stuart Highway again. I was south of Cooper Pedy. It was about sunset time, and I was starting to think about looking for a nice dirt track that I could find a nice little place to camp. And in the distance, so there's very few cars, I had overtaken a troopy of a couple of fellas from Tasmania who were just cruising along very slowly. And I'd overtaken them, but that was ages earlier. And I saw in the distance this car, and it swerved across in front of me, but it was off in the distance a bit. And it did a circle, and it was all this dust appeared. And I thought, oh, my God, I thought they were joy-tripping or making donuts or something like that purposefully. And then it just, all this dust drilled up, and then it just stopped. And then I realized, oh, my God, it's an accident. I'm the first on the scene of this accident. And I kept driving, and it was really tentative, and again the time just slowed down, and I drove through the dust. The dust had covered the road, and the vehicle was on the road to the right of me, and I pulled off to the left, and it felt like a Mad Max film. Everything slowed down. There was this dust across the road, and I was sitting in I saw as I drove through the dust, I could see this vehicle, and it was upside down, a white four-wheel drive, upside down and squashed. And I've never had a moment of such distaste in my whole being, in that I just, the last thing I wanted to do was go over that vehicle, because I felt so inadequate, I guess. I pictured that someone was dead or dying in there, maybe there would be children, and if I had more medical knowledge, I might be able to help them, but I wouldn't be able to help them. Like, that I would be ill-equipped to be able to help people who needed it. And I was terrified. And so in my mind, I was running through these scenarios and feeling this, you know, immense distaste for wanting to go there. And then my voice in my head said, Cherie, break out of it. Go and help these people. Like, you know, go and help. So I jumped out of the car. I walked across the road, and that's where it felt like a Mad Max film, was just like these footsteps across the road. The dust was still rising from the road. And then I ran over to the car, and I could just see some cloth of a person in the driver's side. And I'm calling out, can anyone hear me? Can anyone hear me? And the car was still going, the engine was still going, and I ran around the passenger side, and I looked in, and I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, and I couldn't tell if they were dead or alive, but they're upside down, hanging upside down in the car. And I called out, I'm like, can you hear me? Can you hear me? And again, I was thinking the car might blow up at any point. I'm not really sure of the danger right here. So I was really at odds with how I interact with this scene. And then just as I did, this man woke up, and he had bloodshot eyes, and his face just came racing towards me. He sort of jumped up and came towards me, and I jumped back, and it just terrified me. And it was very fascinating in the way, you know, out in the middle of nowhere in these kind of scenarios, everything gets magnified, and including your fears and your stories. And it just tapped into this really deep fear of mine. This man represented like an archetype that I realized that I was scared of, which was this kind of crazy looking white man who knew that I was there by myself. And so it played directly into that archetype, and I was terrified. And then I had this moment where I thought, but hang on, he knows I'm here by myself, but actually he's stuck under a car and he can't get out if I help him. So it was this really strange thing that played out in my mind. And then and then I looked at his legs and they seemed to be crushed under the, and I wasn't sure whether he should move anyway, because they seemed to be sort of crushed under the space. And he started to move, try and get out, and he couldn't. And he looked up at me and he put his arm out and his hands out and beckoning for me to help him. And at that moment, I thought, well, if he thinks he can move and he wants to be moved, then I'll try and move him. So I grabbed the top of the car with my left hand, and with my right hand, I grabbed his hand and I yanked him. He was quite large, but he moved. He came out, and it took me three big drags, and he came to the edge of the car, and then he started moving his own body and dragging himself out. And right at that moment, the archetype played into my fears again, and I thought, oh my God, he's free. And I had to talk myself through this moment, and like, this man needs help. And so I thought to myself, I remembered that I'd overtaken the car with the two Tasmanian guys with the dreadlocks, the two hippies that were coming up the road. And I thought, okay, I said to the old man, do you want me to stay here with you? Because I couldn't tell if he was bleeding or if he may be a lot worse than he looked. And he said, or do you want me to go and get help for you? And he said, can you go and get help? So I said, okay, there's these two guys I know are coming up the road. I'm going to go and stop them. I'm going to ask them to sit here with you. And then I'm going to go and drive to the nearest town and call the ambulance. And so I flagged the guys down, and they were great. They sort of came also through the Mad Max kind of dust, and they came and they thought of something which I didn't, which was turning the vehicle off. And they pulled out a swag and started helping the old man. And I took off to the nearest town and called for the ambulance, who gave me instructions on what to do when I got back to the scene. And when I got back to the scene, the young fellas, on instruction from the old man, were clearing all these empty beer cans out of his car and throwing them into the bush, because the old man said, oh, when the cops arrive, they'll think I'm drunk, but I'm not. And also the young fellas were setting up a fire, but there was fuel everywhere. And I said, God, no, don't set up a fire. But it just played out on a number of levels. And I also realized I was angry at the man, because he could have killed me. He swerved in front of me. And if it was, life had these few different seconds delayed, that would have been a head on where he would have killed me. So it just played out. But it was kind of a bonding experience between the four of us in the end. By the time the ambulance came hours later, and the fire brigade and the police, it was hours we waited, and they finally all came, and we all had to lift him and get him in. And then we're all just like, whew, get back on the road, I guess.
Get back on the road. There is so much to that story. I'm feeling Mad Max film. I'm also feeling a Marianne Butler play. There's a lot to unpack there. Sheree, I'm just curious, you've been spending all this time thinking about the road, you've had these extraordinary, life-changing, shape-shifting experiences. What has all this taught you about yourself?
That's a good question, Miranda. What has this taught me about myself? I really like my own company. I prefer it, actually. I suppose when I first started doing this, it was more confronting and terrifying, but I liked it. I kind of like throwing myself in the deep ends. And so I've gotten to know myself very intimately by doing this, and what makes me panic, with these kinds of experiences, what I notice is that I feel increasingly calm as something crazy happens. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. Now, what do we need to do to get through this? And so these experiences of going out by myself really help with when I come back to towns and integrate with life there, and in the work I do, particularly the work in Aboriginal communities, is very working in wellbeing and substance use, and social emotional wellbeing and suicide risk. There's a lot of trauma, and the trauma is very, it's very pervasive. And it's, I've noticed through my experiences on my own that it also manifests in my own body being around it. So I need these healing sessions really to deal with my own personal things, as well as the trauma that I'm around in the work that I do. So I've learned to really like myself. I've learned my strengths. I've learned to build on them. I've learned to create space where I need to by taking these kind of pristine landscapes and the things that you learn by going to the edge in these places, and then bringing them back into your working life and your personal life.
That was Sheree Cairney. Sheree is a neuroscientist and photographer. She's part of a collaborative art exhibition called The Road, which showed in Darwin last year. And Alice Springs, it's your turn now. The Road will be in Alice as part of the Desert Festival, and you can catch it at the Crisp Street Art Shed from the 24th of September until the 3rd of October. Miranda Tetlow's My Name, you take care.